Rogers. Another strike in the same area killed two more civilians. Gaza's health ministry says nearly 1,500 civilians, including over 100 children, have been killed and over 3,600 injured since the resumption of the genocide on March the 18th. The overall death toll now tops 50,800, including 211 journalists, with nearly 115,700 others injured. UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese has urged the international community to stop treating Israel as a normal state and recognize it as an apartheid regime committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. In a continuation of the Israeli policy of using humanitarian supplies as a tool of war against the Palestinians, in Gaza, the regime has also systematically crippled the ability of NGOs operating there. Aid groups are unable to cope with the immense pressure due to the catastrophic humanitarian conditions.
Since the onset of the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, it has become unambiguous that the Israeli regime uses the humanitarian needs as a tool to blackmail the Palestinian resistance on one hand and collectively punish the entire population on the other. It was not enough for the occupation forces to close Gaza crossings and prevent the flow of the humanitarian supplies. Neither was it enough to ruin all life sectors in Gaza. They proceeded vigorously to narrow the leeway of NGOs to operate.
Since the start of the genocidal war on Gaza, the Israeli regime has been targeting relief workers from international and local organizations deliberately. We have hundreds of those individuals, many of them foreigners, who were killed while helping the Palestinian people. This is a flagrant violation of all international and humanitarian laws, because those workers must be protected. We comprehend that the main aim of these systematic attacks is to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people in light of the Israeli policy of using the humanitarian conditions as a method of war.
Considering that 2.2 million Palestinians in Gaza, 70% women and children, are utterly relying on those supplies and services provided by international and local NGOs, is enough to paint a tragic picture of the current situation in Gaza. Those organizations that were striving over the past months to secure some amounts of food items to the families torn apart in the displacement camps are no longer able to get even the minimum percentage of the life-saving materials.
The Israeli regime has been tightening its suffocating siege on Gaza by preventing the entry of the humanitarian needs, which not only plunges the people into catastrophic situations, but exposes the ability of humanitarian organizations to respond to the crises. Those organizations have been grappling with Israeli tactics used against them. Nowadays, zero trucks of goods, medical supplies, and fuel are allowed, which means that the organizations will shut their doors soon. The world needs to take decisive actions to stop these crimes against Gazans.
Since the resumption of the genocidal war on Gaza, a plethora of warnings and statements were unleashed by the NGOs, sounding the alarms of them being unable to function in Gaza due to Israeli attacks that claimed hundreds more lives in addition to the prevention of the basic supplies. Having 25 World Food Programme supported bakeries in Gaza shut down could be just the beginning of the absolute famine that will be a recipe of a death sentence for the entire population. With every brutal measure taken against the Gaza Strip, the Israeli regime presents more poignant evidences that it has no red lines when it comes to shattering the lives of the Palestinian people, and it reflects in the abhorrent silence and inaction of the international community. Mutab Msabih, Deir el-Balahsiri, the central area of Gaza Strip.
A large group of pro-Palestine activists and non-governmental organizations has held a mass protest in the French capital, Paris. Protesters denounce Israel's genocide on the besieged Gaza Strip while expressing solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Every day we are demonstrating in Paris, women, men and children too, to expose this genocide and to say that nobody can silence us.
I just want the government to take a stand, to recognize the state of Palestine, and to stop welcoming a war criminal like Netanyahu in the country.
French protesters strongly condemned Israel's attacks on hospital journalists and aid workers. They also denounce hypocrisy of the Western states in dealing with the Gaza crisis. Participants criticized the French government's support for Israel, calling for an immediate end to Paris cooperation with Tel Aviv. They carried banners and Palestinian flags while chanting slogans demanding the arrest of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Demonstrators vowed to continue daily protests in various cities until the genocide in Gaza comes to an end. Israeli forces continue to conduct violent raids on Palestinian towns and cities across the occupied West Bank, this time targeting educational institutions in the occupied territory. An Israeli raid on Al-Quds University campus in the town of Abu Dis, east of the occupied city of Al-Quds, has left nearly 30 students injured. The Palestinian Red Crescent says students suffered burns and suffocation caused by tear gas canisters. The regime's forces also stormed six UN-run schools across the occupied territory, announcing plans to close those facilities. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees denounced the raids, describing the closure orders as a violation of the right of refugee children to education. UNRWA also called Israel's closure orders a violation of the regime's obligations under international law. It said UN-run schools are protected by the privileges and immunities of the United Nations. West Bank correspondent Naga Hamid joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israel's atrocities across the occupied territory. Let's take a listen.
...and attacked Al-Quds University campus, injuring almost 30 Palestinian students inside the campus in a violation, yet another violation of what's happening over here in the West Bank. The hours of the morning, the IOF started attacking the UNRWA schools, which is in the occupied Al-Quds provenance. The IOF raided Shafat refugee camp, in which there is many UNRWA schools, six UNRWA schools, and handed over orders for it to be closed and interrogated the families and the students. Let's go back to the situation on the ground in the West Bank. Two Palestinians today were announced killed by the IOF forces. One is a Palestinian woman, Amana Ibrahim Yaqub, 30 years old, was shot dead inside near the village of Haris in the province of Salfit. And just an hour ago, the Palestinian Red Crescent announced also and yet another two injuries in live ammunition in chest and back for two Palestinian young men in confrontations in Shukba village to the east of Ramallah. Yet another injury occurred in Jenin today, a critical injury after a Palestinian mm-hmm. young man was shot in the head in a Jenin refugee camp.
Moving on, the United States has carried out more deadly airstrikes on Yemen as Washington continues its brutal military campaign against civilians in the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, U.S. airstrikes on the western province of Hodeidah killed at least six people and injured 16 others, including two women and three children. They said the figure is likely to rise as many people are still trapped under the debris. The strikes reportedly targeted the port cities Al-Hawak district. Local sources also cited a separate U.S. strike on a communications network in Amran Governorate, north of the capital Sana'a. 10 air raids also hit a district east of Sana'a. More airstrikes targeted Damar and Ib Governorates, including three raids on a number of farms west of Damar city. The attacks came just a day after Yemen's army targeted a military target in Israel and U.S. warships in the Red Sea. Washington started its air campaign against Yemen on March the 15th after Sana'a resumed retaliatory attacks on Israel in response to the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Our Sana'a correspondent Abdul Latif al-Bashali was with us earlier with more updates on the latest American airstrikes on Yemen. Let's take a listen.
The victims For these airstrikes are only civilians, as we've seen today clear in the capital of Sana'a. A child and two women were killed, and dozens others were injured. These airstrikes have no negative impact on the capabilities of the Yemeni army. They have no negative impact on the resistance movement, whether militarily or, you know, for the people here in the capital of Sana'a. Despite all of these attacks, despite all the bloodshed, the resistance or the position of the Yemeni people remains defined. They say that they are willing to keep paying the price for standing with the people of Palestine, the people in Gaza who are being killed on a daily basis. Tens of people are being killed every single day, including women and children. So the U.S. and the Israelis are attempting to intimidate the Yemeni people, but the people here say that these attacks will not deter the position of the Yemeni people. You know, they feel like if they withstand this escalating military campaign launched against the country by the U.S. and its allies, they feel like they will emerge stronger and, you know, with more support around the world.
Iran's peaceful nuclear program has been in the Western media's headlines after the U.S. president announced direct talks with Tehran. However, the Iranian foreign minister has rejected Donald Trump's claim. Here is a report on the latest developments.
Iran has reaffirmed its stance that negotiations with Washington will proceed only through indirect channels, ruling out any direct talks.
The negotiations will be held next Saturday in Oman. The talks will be indirect. We do not accept any way other than indirect talks.
Araghchi says the U.S. trying to impose its will through pressure and coercion is not cold negotiation, but rather an act of dictation. He emphasized that Tehran views indirect channels as a better means of ensuring effective and fruitful negotiations. The minister noted that if the other party demonstrates genuine will, an agreement will be in reach. The comments were made after Donald Trump claimed that Tehran and Washington would hold direct talks on Iran's nuclear program.
We're dealing with them directly. You know, a lot of people say, oh, maybe you're going through surrogates or you're not dealing directly, you're dealing through other countries. No, we're dealing with them directly.
Moscow has expressed support and emphasized that such discussions could help de-escalate tensions. The recent developments also earned a welcome from China that called on the U.S. to demonstrate political sincerity.
As the country that unilaterally withdrew from the comprehensive agreement on the Iran nuclear issue and caused the current situation, the U.S. should demonstrate political sincerity, uphold the spirit of mutual respect, participate in dialogue and consultation, and at the same time stop its wrong practice of threats of force and exerting maximum pressure.
As noted by China, U.S. actions, including Trump's withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal, have caused mistrust. Trump has threatened Iran with bombing its nuclear facilities, but many observers say the U.S. president does not want to accept the realities on the ground and achieve peace.
Trump has shown that, you know, he's unpredictable, he's not trustworthy, he's not diplomatic, and he is really have got no willingness to sort of look at the reality and move forward in a way that it will be interest of all parties.
Iran has been actively cooperating with the IAEA without leaving the negotiating table. Now the ball is in the U.S. court again. Before anything, Washington needs to build trust given its past performance.
In Moscow, Iran, Russia, and China have commenced trilateral talks on Tehran's nuclear program behind closed doors. Hosted by the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, discussions by expert delegations aim to establish a roadmap for future cooperation among the three countries. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei had earlier announced ongoing consultations with China, Russia, and European countries regarding Iran's peaceful nuclear program. He said the Moscow event will delve into various aspects of the Iranian nuclear program, the JCPOA and UN Resolution 2231. On March the 14th, 2025, senior officials from Iran, Russia, and China held discussions in Beijing addressing similar issues. China has slammed U.S. claims about jeopardizing the Panama Canal's operations, urging Washington to halt blackmail and plundering of Panama and other countries of the region. The remarks came after U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said during a visit to Panama that the United States will not allow China to threaten the Panama Canal's operations and integrity. In response, China's embassy in Panama refuted Hegseth's claim about interfering in the canal's operations. It is stressed that China has never taken part in the management or operation of the Panama Canal, nor has it interfered in issues concerning the waterway. Describing Hegseth's comments as irresponsible, the embassy said the U.S. has orchestrated a campaign based on China threat theory to undermine cooperation between China and Panama. It added that China has always respected Panama's sovereignty with regard to the canal. After Donald Trump took office as the U.S. president, he vowed to take back the canal and counter what he called China's disproportionate influence over it.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
The American Brown University could become the fifth university in the country to lose federal funding. All the schools that have their federal funding slashed so far are Ivy League institutions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, the Trump administration is reportedly targeting a $510 million cut in federal contracts and grants to Brown University for alleged anti-Semitism on campus and reviewing their diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, while it aggressively expands its campaign to hold U.S. universities accountable, according to reports. The Daily Caller was the first to report on the freeze recently, with CNN saying that it also heard the news from a White House official. While university officials said they had not been formally notified, the school was among dozens warned in March that enforcement actions could be coming as the administration seeks to crack down on academic institutions. Rhode Island's Brown University has an endowment that was valued at $7.2 billion last summer. Brown Provost Francis J. Doyle III sent a message to stakeholders across campus recently saying they were aware of troubling rumors emerging about federal funding cuts to research grants. The provost said, according to a statement shared with the Middle East Eye, we will not repeat these various rumors, including unsubstantiated reports by online outlets, but it is important to share that at this moment, we have no information to substantiate any of these rumors. In your respective roles as chairs and faculty directors, please share this information with your concerned faculty. We are closely monitoring notifications related to grants, but have nothing more we can share as of now. Similar to dozens of other universities, students at the Ivy League school protested against Israel's war on Gaza, setting up an encampment on the grassy quad at the heart of Brown's campus. But unlike at many other universities, Brown administrators chose to negotiate rather than clear the demonstrations forcefully. It has become the fifth known and latest Ivy League university to potentially face a loss of their federal funding. In March this year, Columbia University became the first university to lose some federal funding when the Trump administration slashed $400 million in federal funds. In a press statement at the time, the agencies involved in reviewing the university said the funding cuts were due to the school's continued inaction in the face of persistent harassment of Jewish students. Secretary of Education Linda McMahon said in the press release, since October 7, 2023, Jewish students have faced relentless violence, intimidation, and anti-Semitic harassment on their campuses, only to be ignored by those who are supported to protect them. The statement warned that the cancellations represent the first round of action, and additional cancellations are expected to follow. Columbia University currently holds more than $5 billion in federal grant commitments. The amount announced in March is almost eight times more than the amount the Federal Task Force on Anti-Semitism announced it was considering halting earlier. On April 1st, the Trump administration suspended several dozen research grants totaling $210 million to Princeton University as part of an ongoing investigation into anti-Semitism on campus, according to the White House and the Department of Energy. Princeton President Christopher Isgrabber said in a message on April 1st to the university community that the full rationale for this action is not yet clear. Meanwhile, on March 31st, the government told Harvard University it would review nearly $9 billion in multi-year grant commitments to the university as part of an investigation over anti-Semitism. The review will include more than $255.6 million in current contracts and $8.7 billion in grants spread over multiple layers. Harvard University has also been given set conditions that it must meet, including a mask ban and removal of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs to receive federal money. The review is being conducted by the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the U.S. General Services Administration. McMahon said in a statement that while Harvard has served as a symbol of the American dream of generations, it had failed to protect students from anti-Semitic discrimination and had promoted divisive ideologies over free inquiry. The Trump administration's cancellation of $400 million in federal funding to Columbia University demanded in exchange that Columbia change its disciplinary policies and place its Middle Eastern, African, and South Asian studies programs under administrative control. Columbia University caved to many of the Trump administration's demands, but the exchange resulted in national backlash and the abrupt departure of the university's interim president, Linda Armstrong, last week. The University of Pennsylvania, President Donald Trump's alma mater, was hit with $175 million in cuts over policies allowing some issues to compete in women's sports. In an announcement on March 10th, the Department of Education published a list of 60 universities that are presently under investigation for Title VI violations relating to anti-Semitic harassment and discrimination. Human rights advocates and academic experts have condemned the moves as an assault on freedom of speech and academic freedom.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, never tired. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, and I, being English Radio. And obviously, the title is Never Tired. And what this is about people who, you know, no matter how tired they probably are, they don't really let on. They don't show how tired they are to others when it comes to, you know, meeting, fulfilling their duties towards others, fulfilling the rights of others and helping others and being concerned for others. So, for example, here I'm referring to one of the martyrs from the Holy Defense War by the name of Pervez Khoshgho. So he, for example, he's one of the famous martyrs. He used to work in the telecommunications team. He was a commander there, from what I remember. And so he was working, and he'd also started studying again at the university. So that meant he was coming home really late each night at about 10 o'clock. And he also had young children. But despite this, despite the fact that he worked hard and he was studying hard, he still sort of retained a lot of energy for his children. So, for example, if his daughter would ask him, this would have been in the evening. We know that obviously sometimes children are up really late and they go to the park and we hear them outside playing till 1 or 2 in the morning. So he would have been at home after 10 o'clock. And if his daughter asked him to go to the park with her, he would take her to the park. And then the daughter was probably getting tired, so he would get the daughter back home and get her in bed. And sort of, and then even sit next to her until she would fall asleep. And then what would happen then is that he would then start studying. And not just that, and even if he was up late studying, if one of his kids, for example, his daughter woke up and asked him to draw something for her, he would also do that. Welcome back. This is A to Z and RB English Radio, and obviously I'm talking about the energy, the concern, the patience that obviously our martyrs have for other people, and obviously the most pure-hearted people have for others, so that they never sort of really express to others quite how tired they are. And obviously the martyr I was referring to, Pervez Khoshgho, he, despite working and studying and having young kids, he would still find time, even though he's up late at night studying, to still entertain the kids if they woke up and needed something from him, wanted him to do something for them. And you, this is obviously, this shows so many different things. Obviously his he is so devoted to his family, to being a good father for the children. And obviously he has the responsibility of being both the provider, being the father, also having responsibilities towards his university, so also having to keep up with the study. And at the root of this is also sort of suppressing any desires his ego might have had to just sort of say to him, oh, look, I'm really tired, can't I just go and sleep, rather than you staying up and drawing these pictures for the daughter. So that wasn't there. So how many of us have this calmness, this patience? I'd always say this obviously comes from this level, this piety, and being a really good servant of Allah, being that close to Allah, that everything we do, in a sense, is for Allah and is for others. So it really just is about serving. And as a servant of Allah, of course, we can serve. It's one of the best things is to serve others, serve humanity. Some people do it by serving nature, by protecting nature, protecting the environment, and so on. Essentially, these are just a few extra points for all of us. And I... inshallah, you tune into another episode of A to Z here on IRB English Radio, and farewell for today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Trump administration says it inadvertently told some Ukrainian refugees they needed to leave the United States immediately because their legal status was being revoked. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered the story and tells us more. The Trump administration on Friday, 4th of April, said it accidentally told some Ukrainian refugees they needed to leave the United States immediately because their legal status was being revoked, telling CBS News the message was sent by mistake. Some Ukrainians who had entered the United States under the Biden administration following the eruption of war with Russia received emails this week telling them that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security would be terminating their legal protections, according to advocates and a notice obtained by CBS News. The Department of Homeland Security is now exercising its discretion to terminate your parole, the 3rd of April notice said, referring to the temporary legal status that the Biden administration granted to hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians. The email added, unless it expires sooner, Your parole will terminate 7 days from the date of this notice. The Biden administration welcomed roughly 240,000 Ukrainians under a policy known as Uniting for Ukraine, or U for U, that allowed Americans to sponsor Ukrainians displaced by the war. More than 20,000 Ukrainians who flew to Mexico at the start of the war were also allowed into the United States under the Parole Authority, which allows officials to offer temporary work permits and deportation protections to migrants on humanitarian grounds. If recipients failed to leave the United States, the message said, they would be subject to potential law enforcement actions that will result in your removal from the United States, unless they have received another immigration status. The notice also said recipients would lose their work permits once their parole status was revoked, and encouraged them to sign up for self-deportation using a government smartphone app known as CBP Home that the Trump administration recently repurposed. Again, the Department of Homeland Security is terminating your parole. Do not attempt to remain in the United States. The federal government will find you, the notice warned. Please depart the United States immediately. But when CBS News asked representatives for Department of Homeland Security about the notice, they said it has been sent erroneously. It was an error. A message was sent in error to some Ukrainians under the U for U program, Department of Homeland Security said in a statement. The U for U parole program has not been terminated. The agency also took the step of retracting the email on Friday, writing to recipients in a second email. The second email read, "You may have received an email notification titled Notice of Termination of Parole. The Department of Homeland Security sent this email to you in error. No action will be taken with respect to your parole." It is unclear just how many Ukrainians received the government's email. While the Trump administration has not formally terminated the Uniting for Ukraine program, it suspended admissions under the policy as well as status renewals for those already in the United States. Despite the Trump administration's statement that it sent the termination notices inadvertently, advocates continue to worry officials could still attempt to strip Ukrainians of their legal status in the future. As part of its sweeping crackdown on illegal and legal immigration, the Trump administration has moved to dismantle Biden administration immigration programs that relied on the parole authority. It has discontinued a sponsorship initiative for Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans, and warned the more than 500,000 migrants who came to the United States under the policy that they would face arrest and deportation if they did not self-deport by 24th of April. Website Politico has also covered the same story. Ukrainians living in the United States legally received an email in error on Friday, 4th of April, from the Department of Homeland Security, telling them that their parole status had been revoked and that they must self-deport, according to a Trump administration official. It wasn't immediately clear how many people received the email notification, which caused widespread panic among people who fled the war and have been on edge since President Donald Trump said last month that he may revoke their temporary legal residency status. As of yet, the United States has not terminated the temporary parole status granted to 240,000 Ukrainians who fled the war under President Joe Biden, according to Tricia McLaughlin, a spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security. The move to reverse it, which has been telegraphed by the White House in recent months, will potentially place hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians on track to be quickly deported. The email, first reported by Migrant Insider, spurred immediate confusion as lawmakers began to receive calls from constituents about the notifications. Many Ukrainians were already bracing for such a directive from the Trump administration, part of a broader effort to strip legal status from nearly 2 million people who are allowed to stay in the United States through temporary humanitarian parole programs under former President Joe Biden. Donald Trump has already ordered the end of parole status for about 530,000 Venezuelans, Cubans, and Haitians, and said last month that he was considering doing the same for Ukrainians, who were part of a wave of refugees who fled at the start of the war. Donald Trump told reporters in the Oval Office last month, when asked about revoking Ukrainian status, he said, "We're not looking to hurt anybody. We're certainly not looking to hurt them. And I'm looking at that." Trump added, "There were some people that think that's appropriate and some people don't, and I'll be making the decision pretty soon." A spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security did not say whether a final determination had been made and when the notifications were intended to go out. On his first day in office, Donald Trump called on Department of Homeland Security officials to terminate all categorical parole programs as part of a slew of immigration executive orders. He also paused admissions under a program for Ukrainians, Uniting for Ukraine, soon after he took office on 20th of January. Barring those already in the United States from renewing their two-year protections and work permits and halting new admissions.
Welcome to the Israel Watch, which monitored Trump's threats to Iran and Tehran's response. The Israeli attacks on Syria, the continued missile launches from Yemen on the Israeli entity, as well as the expansion of the aggression on the Gaza Strip, and finally, internal Israeli divisions. We discuss these topics with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you. Hello.
In Hebrew media, there are those who do not want or who do not expect Trump to launch a military attack on Iran to protect Israelis due to the repercussions this would have on the U.S. economy. Dr. Mohsen, do you think that Israelis would actually launch an attack on Iran and then drag the United States into that war?
Not without the United States, not without the approval of the United States, because we know that Israelis are afraid from the experience with Iran and with the access of the resistance in the region. They are afraid from Yemen. They were afraid and still afraid from Lebanon and Syria and, of course, Gaza and the West Bank. So they calculated very well that Trump, if he doesn't go to launch an attack on Iran, then they will have to wait, especially in this amalgamation of the economic war against everybody, even against the consumers, of the American consumers. So we are talking about a new phase of the wars, especially in the economic aspect. Would the Americans and even the Arabs allow Trump to launch an attack on Iran at the time when they are having this feeling that all the oil
fields in the Gulf would have a special attack to eliminate all the oil wells, I doubt it. Mm-hmm. So the Israelis are stuck.
So they would rather push the United States to actually launch that war, Dr. Mohsen.
And even they now, at this moment, I guess they don't have this opportunity because Iran and its power, and also
they are threatening of launching an attack.
They have been threatening for
and they have the capabilities
for decades. They have the capability of very on some spots, but you know that there are 18 places, 18 posts of the nuclear enrichment in many areas in Iran. So they can't damage the Iranian nuclear centrifuges unless they have something inside, which they lack, they don't have. So we are having this opportunity for Iran in order to impose some of the political agenda in the region, especially in Yemen and in Palestine, more than the Israelis. The Israelis are stuck, especially in Syria, especially in Lebanon, Ortegos and others who are reaching the region. They have no opportunity in order to find a peace settlement with the Palestinians and with the Lebanese. So we are having a lot of complications here and ramifications of all these talks, and they can't settle the issues unless the Russians and the Chinese come to the table, which is very far-fetched, let's to say.
Okay.
They can't do to that to that area.
To the Gaza Strip, where the bloody wide-scale Israeli aggression continues. The occupation is expanding into large areas inside the Strip, including taking control of the Murag axis south of Gaza and cutting the road between Rafah and Khan Yunus. Where is this Israeli aggression on Gaza heading towards, Dr. Mohsen, and what's the significance of occupying the Murag axis that separates Khan Yunus from Rafah?
Well, it's the whole issue, the whole spectrum of this attack on Gaza, and I would agree on this puzzlement of the some of the journalists about the Netanyahu's plans in Gaza,
mm-hmm.
whether they want to put down Hamas, dismantle Hamas, and try to evacuate the Strip from Hamas and its power. But as far as they are negotiating with Hamas and they are obliged to go to these negotiations with Hamas because of the hostages, I guess Hamas is in a good shape. And they have this power in order to impose some of the conditions against Netanyahu. Especially they are perplexed. They have this problem in trying to arrange the issue with Qatar, with Masa, with Egypt, and with Jordan.
Maybe they're only doing it because of the captives, not for any other reason, Dr.
Absolutely, yes. And they are trying to, of course, to evacuate. And this block and checkpoint and to separate Khan Yunis from Rafah in order to evacuate or find a way to the Palestinians.
As you were highlighting, divide and conquer.
Yes. And I guess the Palestinians are still stuck to Hamas's agenda, and they have to, because they have no other solutions, either to evacuate Gaza and leave Gaza, or to stick to the resistance, which Hamas has been doing for 2 years after the 7th of October. And I guess Hamas, in spite of all these losses in martyrs and children, and of course with the buildings and casualties, mm-hmm. and injured people, and all these political media doing in their minds, in the minds of the Palestinians and the Arabs, but I guess the results won't be on the interests, in the Israeli interests,
okay,
and the Americans as well. Let's be frank. Now the situation in Gaza, especially in Gaza and in the Arab world, it's not right away for the Israeli interest directly, because also they have this split and this division and this problem inside the Israeli society.
Okay, but do you think what's
Israeli
happening?
Society.
Okay, but
so
do you
the
think
consequences for
yes.
the Palestinians are not more than what has happened
Okay, though there is a mere media blackout for us to understand that vision.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
however,
right.
do you think what's happening in Gaza will give full control for Netanyahu to actually control the Gaza Strip?
Absolutely not.
We're seeing massacres.
They could not. Still,
these
there
past
are
2 days.
Missiles and rockets going from Gaza into the settlements. Still, the political situation, especially in the Arab world, they can't agree with Netanyahu to evacuate and Trump to their plan to evacuate Gaza, in spite of all these problems and dangerous attacks against the civilians and the hospitals, of course. So we are having a kind of dilemma for both, for the Arabs and for the Israelis and the Americans. They are stuck in their plans, and there is no plan for uprooting, let's to say, the Palestinians, neither for the Palestinians in order to achieve an independent Gaza, regardless of the Arab opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So we are having such a dilemma, such a crisis, that we should calculate it anew, in order to give space for the resistance, in order to recollect its power and its plans inside Gaza and in other places. So we are having this this rest or this truce in order to recollect the power of these two teams, whether the Israelis and the Americans. And the Americans, they have problem with the world now, especially what I have mentioned
yes.
about the economic situation. So we
okay.
are in a state of limbo.
Okay.
We are in a state of limbo for everybody,
okay.
for everybody,
however,
in Syria and in Lebanon.
Okay, now moving to the recent Israeli aggression on Syria, which targeted Damascus, Hama Airport, and other areas. Hebrew media confirmed it was an Israeli message to Turkey against setting up military bases or bringing weapons into Syria. Do you think that this aggression would actually bring up a new phase of confrontation between Turkey and Israel?
Well, in spite of all these statements of the foreign minister, of the Israeli foreign minister and the Turkish foreign minister, that they don't want any direct clashes with each other in Syria, especially in Syria, it seems that the situations and the expeditions, the Israeli expeditions, and of course the existence in Syria, of course the Turks have helped, and they have toppled the Assad's regime, and they helped this Julani's team and their parties. I guess the situation is going to deteriorate, because the Israelis, they are afraid that, especially from the resistance in the southern part, to increase and to accelerate its actions.
So they are
the
going
attack.
To fight each other, Turkey and Israel?
They are fighting each other by indirectly. But will they go into war against each other in spite of all this situation, because they belong to the NATO? Of course, Israel is not a member in the NATO. The Turks, of course, they are in the NATO, and they are the second power in the NATO. But I guess
but
they
won't. But that's not enough reason for them not to actually go into war against each other, even if they are members of the NATO.
Yeah, but there is a situation where the Israelis have this limitations of movement against the Turks, because they have other battlefields in Lebanon, in Gaza, and in Yemen as well. So
what about the stance of the United States? Would the United States actually approve on that, because they're both allies?
That's another problem. Probably Obama, he likes Erdogan, but at the same time, we have to see the aftermath of this war, economic war, and we have to see also the Turks' interests in Syria. Will the Turks allow the Israelis to invade till Damascus, and they will take the north, and they have to share
divide Syria.
Okay. To share Syria, okay. And they have indirect
talks.
You're
speaking about an agreement here to avoid a war.
Let's say a secret agreement.
Okay.
Covered agreement.
Yes, it's very important. It's very important to actually listen to the Israeli social media. Israeli social media discussed the Israeli aggression on Syria. Here are some of the comments.
Nimrod Madar. The attack on the T4 airport, where the Turks attempted to establish a military base, is a correct and important step. Israel must make it clear to Turkey and to the Julani group that it will not accept Turkish presence on the land of our northern neighbor. We must actively work to enhance Israeli influence in Syria and push the Turks out of the area. Israeli-Kurdish Friendship Association. Israel will bomb any Turkish military base on Syrian territory and will not allow the establishment of Turkish bases there. Ilabi. To this day, Syria is still considered a sovereign state. Let's begin with that to conclude that Israeli action inside Syria constitutes a violation of international law. So good luck to our soldiers in The Hague.
Our time is up. Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, thank you for joining
us.
Muscle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to another enlightening episode of Islamic Upbringing, where we dive deep into the essential aspects of nurturing your youth in line with Islamic teachings. In this program, our discussions are rooted in the guidance of the Holy Quran and the timeless wisdom of Hadith from our beloved Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and the insightful narratives of our noble Imams. I'm glad to have with us today Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas, a research scholar from the Seminary of Qom, who possesses a wealth of knowledge in both Islamic studies as well as psychology. So, Brother Liaqat Abbas, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, when coming to peer pressure, it's not just in the academic teaching, it's not just in the some things that are limited to the school. The peer pressure continues in the social spheres as well. How you behave on social media, what you post and what you don't post, what you wear and what you do not wear, the pressure keeps on continuing. And as long as the pressure continues,
We are here to address the problems. Yes, Brother Liaquat, peer pressure, as we said, is not just in one sphere of a teen's life. It is in multiple spheres. So, like, it's important to address the other spheres. So, like, very quick, I would want you to address those spheres.
Okay. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, just like a teen is pressurized into kind of substance use, okay, like maybe smoking or drinking or committing other sins, and also like academic.